Welcome to Get Real with Casey Kasem, the ultimate insider's guide to the fantasy football industry. I'm your host, Casey Kasem, content creator for Roto Baller, South Harmon FF, and Fantasy Six Pack. And today we're diving deep into the world of fantasy football with an exclusive interview featuring one of the brightest minds in the business. Joining me on the episode today is none other than Tommy Blair, co-host of the Superflex Super Show and Dynasty Junkies. Tommy brings a wealth of experience and knowledge to the table, and we cover everything from his journey into podcasting to his passion for Dynasty Fantasy Football and even his unwavering support for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We discuss Tommy's beginnings in podcasting, his insights into energy management, and what it's like to be in front of a passionate audience. Plus, we delve into his extensive history in fantasy football, dating all the way back to 1999. Be sure to follow Tommy on Twitter at FFTommyB and connect with me at TheCaseyKasem and the podcast at GetReal_pod. This podcast is a proud member of the DAP Network. And don't forget to check out my fantasy football-inspired t-shirt company, Sunday Dreamers Club, available at SundayDreamersClub.com and on Etsy. Your support means the world to me as it helps keep this podcast running smoothly. Without further ado, let's get real with Tommy Blair on Get Real with Casey Kasem. Great to be right during the day. Like, this is one of my favorite parts of quote unquote not having a job right now is I can record during the day. So here I am with a new guest. I have Tommy on the show today, and we're going to get to know a little bit more about him. So, hey, Tommy, let's go back to growing up, because I like to know everybody's kind of backstory on sports and how they became a fan of football and all of that jazz. So can you kind of just tell everybody your experience with sports growing up?
Absolutely. First, I'm going to totally hijack your show right off the bat, if that's okay.
No, you can.
I want to say thank you for creating what you have in this space. It's something different. It's something that I listen to every time an episode comes out. And I really enjoy getting to know all of these different analysts as human beings, right? I listen to just about everything I can get my hands on. I used to drive like 1500 miles a week. And so all of these different fantasy analysts were, you know, riding passenger with me, so to speak, for hours upon hours, for years upon years. And I feel like I know them a little bit more. And that's because of you. I think you've created something really cool. And I want to acknowledge that right off the bat.
Thank you. That means a lot to me because, yeah, getting to know people is such a blast, and just getting to know so many more people in this space, because like with you, I've never really had a conversation with you and gotten to know more about you. So it is cool to be able to sit down and have those conversations. And I just appreciate you listening and everybody that listens. Like, it really means the world to me. It's crazy, but it means the world to me. So thank you, Tommy.
Yeah, of course. To start answering your question, I grew up in Alaska. So there isn't a lot going on in the town that I grew up in. There were 800 people. It was 100 miles to the next town. And so it was pretty isolated. There was no internet for most of my childhood. We had dial-up when I was in high school, finally. And because of that, in this insular bubble, sports took on like almost a reverence. When you had a football team or a baseball team, whatever, it was like something akin to religion for us. There was a selection and then an inclusion into the club of fanhood. And in the mid-90s, my parents were Dolphins fans and 49ers fans. My dad was a Dolphins fan. And so Marino was really big for us. And my mom was kind of a bandwagoner, let's be honest. And so, yeah, she liked the 49ers. And I wanted my own thing. I wanted my own team. I didn't want to just adopt my parents' teams. And lucky for me, that's when the NFL was expanding, right? So the Carolina Panthers, the Jacksonville Jaguars in 1994 were announced as having franchises for the upcoming season in 1995. And I couldn't have been more excited. This was the perfect opportunity to become the first fan, so to speak, of an NFL franchise, to have my own team for my entire fanhood. And none of my siblings, I have five brothers and sisters, none of my siblings could have it because it was mine. And so I had to pick. Was it going to be the Carolina Panthers? Was it going to be the Jacksonville Jaguars? I chose based on color scheme, and I liked the teal of the Jaguars a little bit more. And thank God I did, because I've really grown to love the community of Jacksonville as much as it's easy to dunk on them. like The Good Place with Jason Mendoza, the breakdancer, and they make fun of the Swamp Town and all that stuff. Like, I get it. It's really funny. But I really love that tiny little community. And I think it's really cool to have been with an NFL franchise literally every snap of the way.
Yeah, that is really cool. Like, I kind of just got born into a Dallas Cowboys household, and I'm from the area, so it makes sense that I would go that route. But it's really cool to see how you found a team, because a lot of people went my route. So it's cool that you have that. And the Jags, yeah, the whole Good Place thing, though, oh, I loved it so much. So Bortles and all that, it was great.
Yeah, it is really reflective of some demographic of Jaguars fanhood as well. And it's almost like we can make fun of them because, you know, we're part of the club. But whenever anybody else does, man, that is a slight that I will never forgive. And so I am an easy target. I'll be totally honest. I have a number one Jags fan vanity plate. So like, I'm fully bought into the bit. And you know what? It's kind of nice, though, because having that community, going down to Jacksonville. I live in North Carolina now, but going down to Jacksonville and seeing my people 8 times a year, it is so damn cool. You know, it's almost like having these profound experiences, usually ending in losses, unfortunately, but being around the people that care about this as much as you do, that you never see except in these isolated instances. It's kind of like the fantasy community for me,
yeah,
where it's like, I really love this thing. And when I get on a podcast like yours, I'm sort of in my temple, right? I'm with the true believers, the thinkers of fantasy, the people who really care about this. And it's such a joy to find people as passionate as you are in those types of hobbies, right? Do you find that when you're podcasting?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. And most people, you don't feel like that. It is that. Yeah, exactly. You hit it right on the head right there. Boom. Okay. I want to talk about the Jags. So like player wise, do you have a favorite player of all time that played for the Jags or still plays for the Jags? Who would that be if you could think about it?
I know favorite player of all time. I love Tony Boselli just because he was such a mean human being. He would play really beyond the whistle, and he was so good too, right? He's our only Hall of Famer. But my favorite player, regardless of talent, is Allen Hurns. Undrafted rookie. We were just so terrible in the mid-2000s. Not that we're great right now, but we didn't have a 1,000-yard wide receiver for like 2 decades, essentially. We had Jimmy and Keenan, Jimmy Smith, Keenan McCardell, as the only really productive receivers in our entire franchise's history. And we kept drafting receivers and they kept failing.
Yes.
Finally, we get this undrafted guy who isn't super athletic, who isn't really anything to speak of. And he's on the fringe of the Jaguars roster going into training camp and into the preseason. And then week one, we play the Philadelphia Eagles. And in the first half, he scores 2 touchdowns, one of them 50 yards. And it was just like, I am going to root for this guy for the rest of his career, wherever he goes. Unfortunately, he went to the Houston Texans after the Jaguars' career. But it was just so nice to root for a competent wide receiver for once.
Yeah, I mean, that whole Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns thing, I remember that part of fantasy football. I just remember like fantasy football just blowing up with these two guys, the two Allens, you know, like, yeah, it was. And then he came to the Cowboys and I was really hoping for big things with him when he was with the Cowboys too. I was like, here, let's get an Allen Hurns jersey. I didn't. So maybe that's part of the problem, but definitely a fan of him. So it's really cool for you to bring up that name, because that's not a name that's been on my mind for a while.
He was somebody though, like he won fantasy championships because you picked him up off the waiver wire week one, week two, and he was a productive receiver. Like he maybe league winner is a bit of an exaggeration, but he filled your wide receiver 2 spot for the rest of the year.
Yeah, he was. I love guys like that, and that's such a great story. Finding fantasy football, how did you stumble across that?
So I started playing fantasy football in some iteration in 1999. Like I said, I grew up in a really small town and there wasn't much to do, but our newspaper held a contest every year. If you bought the newspaper, there was a lineup submission, as well as you had to pick which team was going to win across the schedule each week. And in the lineup submission, it was every single NFL player. You could use them once a year, right? So if you used, I don't know, Gus Frerotte, let's say, in week 3, you couldn't use him for the rest of the season. And I was, you know, of the Madden generation, so I knew all of the football players, right? And that was a huge advantage in such a small town. And so I won the league. I picked the correct teams that were going to win enough, but really the strength was I was just dominating on the fantasy football aspect. Nobody else was playing fantasy football in 1999, really. And so the prize was a trip to Hawaii. Unfortunately, I wasn't old enough. You had to be 18 to win. So I got booted out of that league. And then I joined it under a pseudonym the next year and I won it again. I was writing for this paper at the time. And so they threatened to fire me if I did it for a third year. So I stopped playing fantasy football because there was almost like a shame element to it. And I didn't play again for like over 10 years until a work league picked me up and I started playing redraft. And that was really fun. I liked it. I was in, you know, two or three redraft leagues for a few years. And finally, the pandemic hit. And one of my best friends in New York was talking trash to me, saying that he was a better fantasy football player than me. And I was so sick of the Atlas type effort of holding on to all of these different waiver moves and transactions and trade offers and having them reset every year that I didn't want to have the reset component. So I was like, you know what? Let's play a dynasty league. None of us have done it before. Like, let's just jump in and try this thing out. And so we joined a league with 10 other random people and away we went, right? I was lucky. I didn't really know what I was doing. I managed to win the first year. And from there, I was just hooked, you know, one league became three, became 12, became, I think I'm in like 37 right now. I'll only take on leagues if I can afford them with last year's winnings. So like I'm getting better each year, or at least my process is getting better each year so that I feel pretty reliable in how I approach fantasy now. I don't feel as prone to luck, even though there's a lot of it in the game. Like I feel like at a point now where I should have a voice on a podcast. And that's really where I'm at so far in my fantasy career is like now I really want to share some of the ideas that I have, some of the thoughts that I have, because even though the space is really inclusive and there's a lot of great voices out there, I think there's a lot more to be said about fantasy football.
Right. Yeah, I get that. I see it all the time. I see new stuff coming up all the time and I'm like, wow, you know, and just how it's grown has been amazing. And you putting out content after, you know, playing in fantasy football leagues and knowing that you have this information to put out, how did you transition from just playing fantasy football to actually doing content?
Mostly blind luck. I'm a listener to all sorts of different podcasts and I would put in, you know, like listener questions when there was an AMA or whenever they were solicited, I would have thoughts about, you know, the various topics. And eventually I was able to guest on a few, like the fantasy timeline on, oh gosh, what's his name? Dallas, over at the Dynasty Contractor, which no longer exists anymore. And I actually got on Trade Addicts, which was really fun. And I remember after recording on Trade Addicts, not being able to sleep that night. So I was like super excited and jazzed up. I was like, this is it. This is the type of content that I want to create that's fun, where people are really enjoying what they're talking about and don't take it too seriously. But, you know, there can be some numbers involved. There can be some sort of market considerations involved. And so what I did was I reached out to Russ and I was like, hey, what does it take to get in a TA league? He's like, well, we have essentially a lottery. So you can submit a form here. And if your name gets randomly drawn, we'll put you in a dispersal with an orphan team. And so I did that and was lucky enough to be picked. So I'm in Trade Addicts League 6, which is just full of amazing content creators and just like really good people, like J Mike and John Hogue and Brian Haar. Like, I don't want to leave anybody out. Like, they're all legitimately awesome people. But John Hogue is in that league. And he and I had DM'd a couple times back and forth about some Superflex strategy. And he just randomly invited me on his show as a guest. And I was so pumped because I'd been listening to the Superflex Super Show for years. And I was like, yeah, this is it. And so I don't know if you ever listened to his show, but he has this amazing intro where he just like brings all of the energy in the universe right at the first 10 seconds. And when he was doing that, you know, when I was guesting the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, like it almost jolted me awake. And we had some conversation. I was terrible on the show, but I had ideas that he liked. And so we just kept DMing. I think I guessed it a few more times. And finally, like he asked me like, hey, are you good at waivers? Yeah, I'm pretty good, I guess. As good as anybody can be on waivers. And he invited me to be a regular host during the season to do like the waiver transactions and the buys and the sells and the trade fours and aways, those types of moves. And from there, it's grown. Like, he lets me pick the topics now, which is really fun. And so without any prep, I'll be like, hey, today we're going to talk about this concept I was thinking about in the car. And he's game for just about anything, which is awesome. It's a sign of a really, really good host, right? Yes. So I'm the co-host. I'm just somebody who bounces ideas off of him. And he builds all of the structure around a show, which those of you who either have or haven't done that before, that's a really difficult thing to do, to keep everyone in line with the topic, to move it forward in constructive and interesting ways. I'm terrible at it. And so I really appreciate having a veteran host beside me, because I don't think I would be able to do this without somebody like John.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, shout out Trade Addicts League. I'm in Trade Addicts 7. So
nice.
You got in there right before me. You know, the whole podcasting for the first time thing. Like, yesterday I interviewed somebody who had never been on a podcast before. What kind of advice do you have to people who are just now starting out, either haven't podcasted before or like just maybe guested on one or two podcasts?
I feel like the barrier to entry is just trying, for the most part, because nobody's good at the beginning. And if you are, you're just a savant and good on you. I'm still learning my voice. I'll be totally transparent about that. I have ideas that I think will translate really well into Audible content, and sometimes it just falls on its face, but that's okay. Like, in my opinion, what the fantasy space needs is people who think differently, who have different ideas and aren't afraid to share them, even if they're counter to consensus, even if they don't make a lot of sense, because I think what people are starving for is less of the buy this guy, sell that guy, or some of the economics behind fantasy football. And I think they want to be told a story from a different perspective, right? And so everybody has different strengths and knowledge that they can draw on. Mine is energy management. So I consult and help out all sorts of different parties and carbon neutrality goals, energy management, all the nerdy stuff, all the science behind, you know, moving heat from one place to another, or reducing carbon, or renewable energy systems, all of that stuff. And I think a lot of that does belong in the fantasy space, because when you think about the 300 or so players in a player pool in a fantasy football league, that's an ecosystem. To me, it's not an economy, it's an ecosystem. And how they behave in this ecosystem is reflective of a lot of the laws of thermodynamics, a lot of the laws of physics, plant and animal life. And so we don't have to think as economists. We don't have to think as tape grinders or any of that stuff. That's all great, but there are a lot of different angles that are unpursued in this space that I think I would really benefit from having other intelligent voices to teach me about. I think that folks like Scott Connor do amazing work. I can't beat Scott Connor at what he does. He is fantastic at explaining concepts, boiling them down, and providing actionable advice. We don't need another Scott Connor. We have one. Let's find some other voices that are also really compelling at their strengths.
Yeah, for sure. And there are so many different types of content creators. And, you know, you have writing, you have podcasting, video, all of that jazz. Have you gone into the writing aspect of putting out content? Or are you more focused on the audio portion? Because, I mean, I see the, you know, some people can do both. Some people prefer one or the other. So how are you when it comes to that?
Yeah, I don't know how much your experience with writing has changed. I used to be a creative writer. I used to be a journalist. That was my strength and my writing style and really my thought process. It's almost like having a language. And if you don't use it, it changes. It either becomes less proficient or it adapts to whatever your current mindset is. Mine is currently technical writing. And I think that would be really uncompelling stuff for the readers in the fantasy football space. I'm sure there'd be some niche market that would enjoy it, but I wouldn't like to read it. And so I don't want to create it.
I totally get that. I get that though. And yeah, writing is one of those things where I'm like writing, I'm like, this sounds like something I'd say, but also it doesn't. I don't know how to explain it. It's just kind of like I'm putting out all these like stats and stuff into it, which are cool and all. But like if I was just sitting down with somebody and having a conversation, it'd be a different route. So I do like the audio and visual of like YouTube videos and all of that. Had you ever experienced being behind a camera or behind a microphone prior to doing fantasy football content?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I teach as well at a community college. And so I've guest lectured at conferences, at other universities, places like that. I've done the hybrid teaching model, especially during COVID, which it just doesn't work. Let's be honest, y'all. I'm used to being in front of a room. I don't really like being in front of an audience, to be honest with you. I think most people probably don't, and it's just a tolerance thing. There are a few weirdos out there who actually enjoy it. But yeah, it's something I'm used to, but I don't necessarily love.
No, I totally feel that too. Like, people are always like, why don't you put the YouTube videos out? Why don't you do this? Why don't I don't want to have to look at me trying to be any sort of knowledgeable about anything. Like, I'm like, I'm cool, but you know, so.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. When you're on a podcast, are you imagining your audience? And if so, who are you talking to?
Yeah, I really am. When I think about my audience, I just think about the people, like going, when you go to like the Fantasy Football Expo and just seeing, like, you know, just a group of people that are just excited about fantasy football. So I just imagine a bunch of people that are caring people who mm-hmm. are listening because they want to know more about people. So I kind of have my, you know, when you interact with certain people on the internet, I kind of like take all personalities from each of those people and kind of create my own little hybrid, whatever kind of fan, quote unquote fan of the podcast or whatever. But whenever, yeah, I kind of just have a picture of people I know in my head and just kind of go with it there. It doesn't make that much sense, but you know what I mean, kind of.
Yeah. Do you find that helps you to have sort of a visualized person that you're speaking with?
Yeah, I think it does. I think I feel more comfortable. Like, I was talking with my therapist, even like when I'm one-on-one with people doing podcasts, sometimes I'll just imagine that person's somebody else because they remind me of somebody, or, you know, mm-hmm. and then it'll kind of make me feel more comfortable. It's weird, but that's how it goes. And it gets comfortable, and it is nice to have that in your head. Like, I'm thinking of a certain group of people because I've interacted with those people. I know who those people are. So I can kind of model a person after everybody in the community. The community is just great. So
totally.
It helps.
Yeah. It's got to be different though, talking with the same person, possibly with a guest or two, versus having a new person, essentially a new co-host every single week like you do. Do you find that challenging?
It is challenging because everybody is so different.
Yeah.
Like, you have that idea of like, this is what I like to listen content wise. So I kind of have an idea of how that person speaks, how that person, you know, interacts. But some people, you know, don't know how to keep the conversation going and stuff. So you kind of have to like navigate through that to kind of keep it going. Not that I've ever had a bad conversation with anyone, but you do have to kind of like pivot and figure out, okay, what is this person's style like? What is this person's style like? So it is a new adventure every week because yeah. I don't know if I'm going to be talking who, you know, because I haven't talked to a lot of the people. It'll be my very first time talking to them. So I don't really know how the one-on-one's going to go.
Yeah. I've always, you asked this question in some form just a little bit ago of how to bring new people sort of onto the mic. And it would be great to almost have some form of, I don't know about debate show, but a concept that's talked through, and there's two veteran podcasters and they have two newer folks and they form separate teams, right? So a veteran and a rookie, and they work together to frame, you know, some context around the subject. And I think that'd be really fun to have somebody who's really used to being on mic, involving somebody and having a dynamic conversation about one part of the argument, and then to hear the rebuttal and to sort of go back and forth in that way.
Yeah. Look at you. And all your good ideas. That's a great idea. I really think that would have been helpful. Like, when I first started podcasting and doing all that, it was, I don't know what I'm doing. And of course I go to people for advice, like Russ Fisher, you know, you brought up Trade Addicts earlier. So having that kind of connection and being able to say, like, what do I need to do here? How do I do this? Like, I don't even know, like, do I need a microphone? Do I need headphones? Do I need a, you know, how's the Wi-Fi going to be? All of those things, like just having somebody there that can be kind of a mentor. I like that idea a whole lot.
Totally. Yeah. And I also think it'd be fun to bring in folks who know nothing about fantasy football and don't want to know anything about fantasy football. I've been lucky enough to have my wife on a couple times to the Superflex Super Show. She's a psychologist, a therapist, right? And I don't know if she could name 5 NFL players, but the conversations we've had are probably my favorite of any recording I've done, because we talk about concepts, right? And concepts, to me, they're so much more interesting than whether or not Deontay Johnson's going to be good in Carolina, which I think he will be, by the way.
You heard it here, guys. Y'all heard it here. Yeah, that's a really cool idea as well. I should get my wife on this podcast sometime and talk to her about just being married to somebody in this space. Like,
yeah,
how does that work with you? Because I know she's not happy that I'm, you know, podcasting all the time or whatever. And that's why one of the reasons why I was like, okay, I'm going to start doing this, try to start doing all this stuff full time is because, like, after work, I don't want to necessarily sit down and have a conversation because I'm tired, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, the content I'm putting out is me at my best, right? And I feel like we had that conversation earlier, I think off mic, but like the later shows and stuff, like doing it during the day is a whole new world for me. And I love it. It's so great podcasting during the day.
Yeah. Hey, can I give you a plug? I ordered one of your t-shirts.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, for my little boy. It's going to be his first ever fantasy football league. He's 8 years old. Benjamin. And I got him one of your future commish t-shirts. So thank you. He loves it. Oh. And we're really excited for our first ever draft.
Oh, that is so awesome. I love to see that. I love to hear that. That means so much to me. Oh, wow. Wow. That is crazy. I appreciate that so much. For real.
Yeah. What's the website for the listeners, just in case they don't know?
Yeah, for sure. Look at you. You got this whole co-hosting thing down. Yeah. The website is sundaydreamersclub.com. You can find it on Etsy as well, because that's where it is. It's on Etsy, but sundaydreamersclub.com will take you there. And yeah, lots of shirts, and I'm having a lot of fun with it, and going to have a booth at the expo. So that's going to be pretty dope. So nice. Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
Thank you for the plug. I like that. I like that a lot. Thanks. I don't have to drop an ad in here. We got one already. So podcasting and going on other people's podcasts, when you guest on other people's podcasts, how do you have to flip your mind to do that? Or is it comfortable? I know everybody does things differently.
Totally. I try to shorten my language a little bit. I try to bring up my energy a little bit more for sure and fit into the context of how they present information, right? I think if you're going to be a guest on anybody's show, it's probably respectful to listen to two or three episodes if you haven't already, just to really get the tenor, to get the flow, to understand really what it is you're going to be talking about. And so I try to do that whenever I'm guesting on a podcast. So I know recently what's been talked about. I'm not repeating myself. I'm not bringing up content that maybe they don't want to talk about. Maybe they're not into talking about Deshaun Watson being a dirtbag, let's say. It's like, all right, well, I'll avoid that. And I'll say that on my own show.
Right on.
What do you do when you're on somebody else's show? Does it change for you?
It does. Okay, for starters, like when I get invited on shows, obviously it's fantasy football content, like actual fantasy football, not just like learning about people and having a conversation like that. So that part is really different, because I feel like I have to go into it, like, do more research and check, you know. And like you said, I do listen to a few of the podcasts, especially their more recent ones, to kind of get a feel for how the conversation flows and how much time, you know, they give to the guests and so on and so forth. So, but like going into every other podcast, like when they send like a show sheet and stuff, that kind of helps. Mm-hmm. I don't have one, but it's basically because people are just talking about themselves when they come on the show. So I don't think they have to like really check their notes on that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the show sheets, when I first got one for the first time, I was like, oh, what is this? I don't know.
Totally. The thing that stressed me out when I was a newer guest was not having the show link, the StreamYard or whatever mm-hmm. platform you're using, not having that link, but a few minutes before. And so if you want to reduce anxiety for your guests, especially if they're not used to being on air, try to get that out the day before. I found that really does reduce some level of anxiety, because it's like, I don't know, we're recording in 5 minutes and I don't know where I'm supposed to be, what I'm supposed to do. So one small piece of advice for content creators.
Yeah, I see that. See, I'm the bad person who always sends the link like right when it's time to go on. But I usually try to give like, hey, give me a few minutes, or hey, like, you know. But yeah, I do notice that sometimes I'll be sitting there like, are we doing a podcast? I don't have a link. And then they're like, oh, whoops, here you go. So totally, I get that. And I get the nerves thing. And I think it's kind of, I don't know, I've been doing this for a little bit of time. And so I don't really have the same nerves that I used to have when I first started. I still have nerves. They're just not as intense. So like when I'm talking with somebody that's like brand new to podcasting, it takes me a minute to kind of like go back into the past and be like, oh man, I remember all how nervous I was. And I was so scared my internet was going to go down. And I was so scared that like, I was going to just sound like a fool, which it is a thing that happens. And guess what? You just get over it. What are you going to do? There's nothing you could do about it. If you sound like a fool, come back and do better next time. Right. So
that's one of the tough parts is when you blunder, when you stumble over your words or say something that you don't believe in or is kind of dumb. It's like, all right, how do I recover from this, you know? And part of it is just like hitting record the next time and staying with it. That's been something that has been a bit of a challenge for me personally is I really admire the content creators that can do this every single week. They show up, they're sick, you know, whatever. Work is busy. They still show up and they put out content. It's a lot harder than some people might realize. It's like a lifestyle change, you know? It's like signing up for a marathon that never ends.
For real. It's a lot. It is a lot. It's a lot more than I thought it was going to be going into it. Yeah, for sure. I did have to change a whole lot of stuff and change, you know, oh, I can't go out as much because I'm podcasting. I can't go out as much. I got to write. And it's cool. It's been good for my wallet, you know, so at least we have that. You consume content. So when you consume the content, what kind of content do you find yourself most drawn towards?
That's a great question. I try to consume as much varied content as possible. I think that my strength as a dynasty analyst and fantasy football player is that I can find the efficiencies in other people's process. So in the real world, I'm an energy manager. Like I said, it's my job to apply all of the laws of how the world works, right? In meaningful ways. And so it's the applied science, it's applied fantasy football that I think is my strength, where I can learn from other people's processes and sort of create this amalgamation that works. And once you do that, once you build efficiencies, the next phase for me is inefficiency, manipulating other people's attempted efficiencies to make their own teams work against them. And so I can't get to that point where I understand efficiencies and how to disrupt those efficiencies unless I know what other people are suggesting that fantasy footballers do. And so I have to listen to a ton of content to stay up on current strategies, on all of the different nuance between player valuations, roster construction, best practices, different formats, all sorts of things. And so I've found a lot of value in just listening to different voices. And there's plenty of them out there right now, folks who play very differently. I don't find a lot of benefit in listening to just one feed per se. I think that getting a representation of the various feeds has been helpful for me. I have a one-year-old daughter and an eight-year-old son, so time is pretty precious to me. And so I'm fitting these podcasts in really absolutely whenever I can while trying to stay present with my kiddos, my job, and my wife, all that stuff. And so I can't listen to everybody, but I try to get to as many different people as I can. And sometimes I'll stagger them to where I'll hit one podcast and I'll get three episodes in a row. How do you consume content?
When I get to now, I used to, when I was working for the county, we could listen to, you know, podcasts and stuff. So I was constantly just like 8 hours a day listening to podcasts and you know, music in between. But yeah, so I was just kind of consuming as much dynasty content as I could from different sources, because I love redraft, but you know, I'm leaning towards the dynasty being like, that's my jam. So yeah. I want to be really good at dynasty. I just want to be really good at dynasty. So the only way I'm going to do that is if I listen to a bunch of different voices and get the different, their different reasonings for why, you know, they like a certain player, they this way and the other. But I also listen to content to kind of get a style for how other people talk to other people, you know, have conversations, kind of pick up tips from listening to other podcasts, you know. So like that's been really beneficial for me. It's just to kind of, especially like shows that have two co-hosts or have two hosts, just hearing how they talk back and forth is helpful for me when I'm putting out this kind of content, because you don't want to, you know, go into a conversation and just kind of be like, hey, how's it going? It's nice to see that there's like, you know, a kind of friendship there almost, you know, like you can tell these people like each other. You can tell that, you know, they know how to chat with each other, how to bounce ideas off of each other. So I kind of like to pick up that kind of feedback from watching shows as well. Or listening to shows as well.
Yeah. I know you've expanded and you're on different feeds now. I'm going to put you on the spot though. If there's somebody that you're not currently recording with that you could start a show with, who would you choose?
That I could start a show with, who would I choose? Well, that's a good question, because I am going to start a podcast soon and I'm not really sure what I'm going to do when it comes to like having a co-host or if I'm just going to, but I would say, you know, I'm with South Harmon right now, and all those guys over there are super dope. And, you know, Mike with South Harmon, I'd probably say him or Russ, Dynasty Outhouse with, you know, the DAP Network, Trade Addicts. Russ and I, we've been on shows together. We've chatted. He was my very first episode of this show. Like, that guy means the world to me, but oh. I've never actually, you know, I think that we would have a good, I don't know. I think we would have a good rapport with each other on the mic. I think that people would like that. But, you know, Russ has so many things he's got his toes tipped into. He doesn't have time for little old me.
It's cool, the network he's really cultivated, though. And I think it's awesome that you're a part of it. I've actually joined the Dynasty Junkies as a co-host recently.
Yeah.
And I love being under sort of the Russ umbrella, you know?
Yeah, for real. It's a good umbrella to be under. You make sure that you don't get rained on. It's good. It's good. That's an interesting question. See, nobody ever asked me questions, really, you know? I like it when people ask me questions because I'm like, oh, you're putting me on the spot now. I see. But yeah, I really have to think about that one because, like I said, I am in the works doing some sort of podcast that has to do with Dynasty and getting more people involved in Dynasty, because I know when I first started playing Dynasty, it was a whole new world for me. It was scary. I didn't start for a while because I was scared I wasn't going to know what I was doing. I wasn't going to be able to set a lineup properly, do trades, all that fun stuff that comes with it. And I know you're a Dynasty guy. And when you transitioned from playing in those first redraft leagues to deciding like Dynasty was the way to go, what was your thought process going into Dynasty? Did you have to change a lot about your thought process, or did you go into the draft a different way than normal, or how was that for you?
Yeah, I'm a really aggressive redraft player because the consequences are pretty much nothing, right? You either get first place or it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
In Dynasty, that's totally different. And so I came in with a very conservative approach of just hitting singles, a lot of singles. And that worked out really well because there's a lot of bravado in Dynasty Fantasy Football. And there was even less knowledge in 2020. I mean, I was one of the blundering folks in that space where it was just like this influx of new players that didn't really know what we were doing. And I think being conservative in those types of situations is really helpful. So that was my approach coming into Dynasty. Once I started to get my feet under me, I leaned on a lot of the data analytics that I like to do in regular life. And so I was calculating AWARP before it was really fully defined. And I was creating tools in Excel to optimize roster builds and to manipulate different league rules and all sorts of things like that. That's where my mind goes. You know, when I'm watching Survivor, I'm wondering when Jeff Probst puts all those tiki torches on fire and he says, "This represents your life," why somebody doesn't just snuff out all of the other torches and say they won Survivor. Like that's the type of approach I try to have to games, is like, is it allowed? Like, can I do this?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to try it out then. And so trying to have an analytical approach to that, I think has really benefited me. And it's something that I did not do at all in redraft, because you have to pick players. You have to pick names in redraft. You have to be right about individual assets. In Dynasty, it's profiles. It's all profiles. It's all risk mitigation and tiering up into the 15 or so players that really matter in all but the deepest of formats. So it's been a pretty fundamental shift for me as a fantasy football player, but I think it's been revelatory as well. Like I used to love wide receivers, and now I feel like I'm missing out on sort of the party going on. There's that meme of the guy standing in the corner and everyone else is having a great time. That feels like the wide receiver party right now.
The wide receiver party right now. Yeah, for real.
They don't know that wide receivers don't matter.
Okay, so I want to go back on something you touched on earlier with Dynasty Junkies. How did that come about, being a co-host on that show?
It's, again, just being lucky. I guested at some point in the last 12 to 14 months, and I really love talking with Sid Lowe and Rocky, and I hadn't talked to Andrew Hall at that point. But they were lagging a little bit. Let's just be honest. Like, it's tough to keep up momentum into January, February as a content creator.
It is.
I think they just needed another warm body. And because I was on, and because I said like, hey, if you guys ever need anybody to fill in, I'm around. Like they took that seriously. And I was lucky enough to just sort of join a rotation.
That's awesome. Yeah. Those guys are great. And yeah, Andrew's my homie. So shout out Andrew.
Cool dude.
I mean, a shout out to all of those guys, but Andrew's had my back for a while. So he's a pretty dope dude. So all those guys are dope though. Don't get me wrong. And DAP Network is dope. So don't get me wrong. DAP Network, follow all those shows. Thumbs up, more plugs. So, okay. How do you, I guess you guys have guests that come on your shows and how do you go about getting guests? Because I know that's one of those things when I first started, I was like, what do I do?
I don't know what's proper. So I'm going to turn that question around on you in a minute, but I'll answer it real
quick.
I swing for the fences. I get the people that I most admire and respect and haven't had a chance to have a dynamic conversation with. I reached out to you actually, because like, this is your opportunity as a content creator to really learn from somebody else who's put a lot of deep thought and has an ability to vocalize these concepts. So like, why not try to get the absolute best people that resonate with either something you really believe in or really don't believe in so you can learn from them? And so I've just been DMing people on Twitter. I don't know. How do you know?
Yeah, that's how I do that. I get into those DMs and I say, hey, what's up, Matthew Berry? Would you like to come on my show or whatever? Exactly. You know, like that's mainly how I do it. I mean, I obviously enjoy getting to talk to a whole bunch of different people. So I like to find people that come through my timeline that maybe I don't know a whole lot about, come through my Twitter feed that maybe I don't know a whole lot about, or maybe have never heard of them. But then I go click out on their stuff and I start seeing, oh, wow, your content's really cool. And you've got a whole different audience than I have. And I want to get more people listening to me. So I need to find these people that have these audiences that I know would like my stuff, but maybe they haven't heard my stuff. So I like to reach out to those people. But yeah, DMs, definitely. That's the way I've been going about it. I know not everybody checks their DMs. I'm one of those people that's bad about it. But, you know, sometimes I'll reach out via email if they have it listed where, you know, if you want to contact them. But yeah, DMs, definitely. That's how I do it. And the worst they could say is no, or not respond at all. And that's fine. If they don't respond, I just pretend they didn't see it and move along.
Usually you get them next time. You know, that's been my experience, at least.
That really has. And scheduling is really hard too with people, you know, with time zones and people not being able to do it during the day or not being able to do it at night, or finding, you know, I can only do it on the weekend. And I'm like, I don't want to record on the weekend. So that kind of stuff, you know. Do you find that it's sometimes difficult to schedule guests when there's a million different factors out there, or have you not run into that?
I've found that it's really powerful to have a backup plan.
Yeah.
Have a show for the guest and then have a pivot, have a few things in the hopper, because guests fall through all the time. I don't pay guests. I know some people in podcast worlds do, but you're here as a favor to me. And so if you can't show, okay, that's fine. Like I try not to take any of that personally. If you don't DM me back, that's fine. We're all in this space trying to help other people for various reasons, but like, who cares? I mean, a lot of content creators have their own guest list they're trying to fill out. I don't take that personally.
Right. Exactly. And I've told so many people like, I need to get you on my show.
Yeah.
But then like, okay, well I can do Tuesday at this time. And I'm like, okay, well I can do Thursday at this time. And I was like, okay, we'll figure it out. And then like 3 months goes by and I get a DM like, hey, did we ever figure this out? No, we didn't figure it out. So sorry to everybody out there. But the fantasy football space, how did you come across just like the community of fantasy football in general?
Yeah, I still don't know if I fully have, to be honest with you. I joined Twitter in 2020, I think, just to get beat writer news, get the Schefter updates, those types of things. Because like I said, I'm pretty data driven. Do you know what synesthesia is?
I've heard of it, but no.
So I see data in colors. I don't see it as like just numbers. It has other representations to me. I also have like pretty severe memory loss. And so the way that I visualize and act on data is sometimes unconventional. And so I wanted to join Twitter to get those updates and to sort of get a baseline that I could harness my takes to. because nobody uses Facebook. I wasn't going to go on TikTok or any of those other ones. I just picked like one platform and went with it, and Twitter was that. And so I used it very much as an outsider to really keep me aligned with where the industry, where the market, where player takes were going. And I didn't engage very much with actual fantasy analysts or fantasy players for most of the time I've been on Twitter. However, it's an awesome space and I'm starting to integrate a little bit more. I still don't want to chase followers or any of that type of stuff because I don't think I post anything very interesting on Twitter, but I do think other people do. I think that, I mean, you've mentioned this a lot, like going to the Fantasy Football Expo is Twitter in real life. Mm-hmm. I think I need to get there and meet some of y'all. I think that's really the gateway to making it more of a valuable proposition of like being online and tweeting regularly. Is that your understanding, and how do you do it?
Yeah, that's basically it. the Fantasy Football Expo, like you just said, though, like you definitely do need to go to it if you haven't been to it. Like it really is just like the Twitter community is... It's like the Twitter community exploded and now there's like a ton of people that I didn't even know existed, right? And I get there and I'm like, who are all these people? But this is awesome. And this show always sounds like a Fantasy Football Expo plug, big ad. But no, it's really like the community, just seeing it on Twitter and kind of like how you got into Twitter, like I got into Twitter that way to kind of just get it all in one spot, not joining TikTok, even though Luke Sawhook wants me to be a TikTok person. I'm not doing it. I don't think I can. Facebook, like you said, nah, fam. We're good with that. That's fine. But yeah, the Twitter community and just getting out to the expo and stuff and seeing how this is just blown up, like how fantasy football is so important to so many people. It's just like, it's mind blowing. It's super dope though. And yeah, that's my Fantasy Football Expo spiel and my community spiel and all of that, like totally about it.
Yeah. Is it going to be different for you this year? Sort of growing your own brand? How are you going to approach the expo?
I think it will be. Every year it is a little bit different. Like the first year I went, because this will be my fourth year, I think, going. The first year I went was like kind of nothing. Like I was writing for Finding Chance Fantasy at the time, but I really didn't have anything going on. I didn't realize it's 2024 now. I'm over here like, oh, back in 19. No, my podcast was going on, but I wasn't like promoting it or anything. And then like every year that I've gone, I've kind of promoted myself more. I became part of the women's panel that they have there. So fantasy football women talking fantasy football, talking how we got involved in the industry and just kind of promoting myself that way, which feels weird to say promoting myself, but you know, getting my content out there because I would just want to share it with everybody. And that's such a great opportunity to be able to share what you have with people who probably wouldn't have seen it if they weren't at the expo, you know? So having a booth this year is going to be different. We'll see what happens with everything else, but being able to promote like my t-shirt line and then this podcast and helping other people out as well, getting to know people at the booth. I'm excited about all of that because it's going to be different. I think that'll be the biggest difference is having a booth and being able to like be stationary. It's going to be weird because I like walking around. So I'm going to have my wife take care of the booth a lot. But yeah.
I've been given the green light to go this year. So I think I'll be attending if you need somebody to watch the booth for an hour.
Yeah.
I'm the type of person that like, I don't mind mingling. I'm not as introverted as some folks in the fantasy space, but yeah. I imagine having a booth is probably a good thing in that like you can recenter yourself. You've mm-hmm. got sort of a home base to report
home
back
base.
To.
And, exactly. Yeah,
like, sorry, I got to go, everybody.
Sorry. Yeah, it is because when you're there are so many people and you feel like you're being spread so thin because you're like, oh, I know that person over there, I want to go talk to them, or I want to just meet that person, I need to go over there. And then you just get kind of like, whoa, there's just so much going on. I gotta like, sorry, I didn't get to see everybody I wanted to see, but it goes by so fast. It's you'll have to go to see. But yes, I'm glad that you got the green light. I really hope that you can make it out because I'm sure you'll have a blast. Have you ever met anybody in person from the fantasy football community?
No, I actually haven't. No, this is sort of like a little almost hidden part of my life. it's like a secret, you know?
It's a secret.
Do your friends know that you're big in the space?
Yeah. It's weird. Like, I didn't purposely do that kind of stuff, but like my dad runs his mouth. So he showed up 1 year to the fantasy football. He's been to the Fantasy Football Expo twice. He showed up the first time and surprised me, just like showed up. And then when he saw that all these people were like, oh my gosh, and he was wearing the Casey Kasem shirt. And people were like, oh, I know your daughter and all this stuff. So then of course he gets on Facebook and posts, you know, like, my daughter's such a celebrity in the fantasy football space. And I'm like, Jesus. So, yeah.
That's funny.
So you keep all that pretty much hidden, huh?
What's that?
You keep it all hidden? It's a secret?
I don't know. I feel like at work, I want to be taken seriously in what I do. And so I try to be like a very vanilla version of myself. I know it's not super authentic, but like I am working in a role of purpose, right? I'm trying to help the environment in some certain way. I'm trying to help marginalized populations in a very concrete way. And so I think that it doesn't help for me to be perceived as somebody who does fantasy football. And then my friends, like, they're all fairly athletic people. They don't have time for fantasy football. I come from like ultra running and ultra cycling and actually ultimate frisbee as well. I was listening to your interview with Clay, and we actually know a lot of the same people. I didn't realize he was from North Carolina.
Ah, look at you. He got you a connection just from listening to this pod. But yeah, ultimate frisbee. We were talking about like, what is it? Like, you know, playing disc golf and playing, you know, calling it frolf or whatever the hell people call it. I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not in that world, but that's pretty dope that you were listening to Clay. Isn't that crazy though? How you'll just find out some information about somebody in the space and you're like, holy shit, like you're right down the road, or holy shit. Like when I went to the Dallas Live Scott Fishbowl, like there were so many people there that lived 20 minutes away from me. I'm like, how did I not know this? Like I could go hang out with you and watch football if I wanted to. Like,
totally. Speaking of, anybody who's listening in the Raleigh-Durham area, I really, really, really want to have a live draft for Scott Fishbowl this year. We were close last year. I want to have one this year. So please get it in Scott's ear that we can host a live draft. I will do whatever we need to. I'll find us a location. I will do all of the legwork. We just need a dozen people.
Yeah. So please, yeah, you need to let them know so that they know what cities have interest. They don't want to have a live draft somewhere where there's going to be like two people. So let them know. Yep. You let him know. Good times. But yeah, I can't say too much about Scott Fishbowl live drafts, what's going on this year, but let's just say it's going to be good times. We're going to have good times. If you guys don't know what the Scott Fishbowl is, go to scottfishbowl.com. Another plug, but for an awesome, awesome, awesome charity league. So go check that out. Playing in the Scott Fishbowl, we were talking about that. How many years have you played in the Scott Fishbowl for starters?
I have been soundly defeated without a playoff appearance twice now.
Twice
and
now.
I hope to make it a third.
That's all. How did you find out about the Scott Fishbowl? Was it through Twitter or how?
Yeah. So like everybody was posting about this thing and I had no clue what it was. And I randomly signed up and I don't even remember. I must have donated or something. I got entered into one of the rushes and I won. I got in. So I had like, I don't know, maybe like two followers at that point. Not that I have very many right now. So I was just like no presence at all in the fantasy space and got really lucky and drafted an absolutely horrible team. And then the second year, I auctioned off my first round pick for Fantasy Cares. I got $100 in a donation for that. I think I drafted Gardner Minshew first round.
I mean, it sounds like Gardner Minshew's got a lot, you know, going for him right now.
I'm probably going to do the same. I mean, I'm not going to win. Even if I was really trying hard, I'm not going to win. So you may as well have fun with it and raise some money for charity and like do all the important stuff. Get the t-shirts. They should be really good this year. Like just have fun. And I want to ask you, like, how do you pick your leagues for Scott Fishbowl? Because there's there's usually what, like 100 leagues. How do you choose which one you're going to be in?
I just go with whatever is the coolest for me, like whatever sounds the title of it or whatever is the coolest, like the live draft, obviously, like Dallas, because Dallas, but like in the past, it's always been like I was in Zach Morris 1 year. It was just like, oh, I like that character, so I'm going to be in that. And it's not based on like who's in the league, really. It's more who. No, it's not even matter. It doesn't matter to me who's in the actual. Like, there was a point in time when they were trying to only have like a couple of analysts or people in the space per. But now there's so many that each of them have to have like tons and tons and tons. And so I get to know more people every year. It's interesting. I think the first year I kind of just got thrown into one. It was like I won a contest, and so I just had to be in the league that the podcast was a part of or whatever. So it's like cool. Every year, I've been in it forever. I feel like I don't know, 8 years maybe.
I know it's tough to get into, but there's so many different avenues.
There are, and there's even more now. It's crazy how many contests that they have going and podcasts that give away spots and just being in the right place at the right time. And
yeah,
I did a 3-hour fantasy or a 3-hour freestyle rap a few years back to get money for Fantasy Cares, and so ended up, I don't even remember how much I ended up making off of that to give to Fantasy Cares, but it was really awesome to see the community come together like that. So this whole event really is an awesome, awesome, awesome thing.
Totally. Yeah. I think on Junkies, we're probably going to have a spot to give away. They do this awesome segment called Find Me a Trade.
Yes. And so, I've had my trade.
Nice. That's awesome.
League in there. Yeah. My team.
Yeah. So like you submit your league and like we go through and sort of like curate some form of a trade for you to help everyone get better. I think what we're probably going to do again this year is the listeners will submit their own Find Me a Trades. You know, they'll propose trades and we'll pick one out and somebody will get in, hopefully.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love to see how podcasts have kind of figured out how to put out contests for the Scott Fish Bowl. Really cool, because there's so many people that want in Scott Fish Bowl, and it's cool that we're able to help people. I love it when like somebody wins a contest through me and I can be like part of their journey now in the Scott Fish Bowl. You know, they're always like, thank you so much. I wouldn't have gotten in the first year if it wasn't for you. And I'm like, you probably would have, but you know, probably would have. But so let's talk less fantasy football related stuff, but more life related stuff. What do you like to do in your free time? I know free time is hard for a lot of people to come by, but when you have it, I know you're a family man and everything, but what do you like to do?
Yeah, when I get solo free time, travel, of course. I'm training for an event called Paris Brest Paris. It's what essentially created the Tour de France. It's this 750-mile cycling event in France. And you ride from Paris to the coast and back, and you've got about 3.5 days to get it done. It's really cool because it's more of a adventure and a party. If you finish first, if you finish under the time limit in last place, you get the same amount of accolades. There is no first place that's recorded. There are only finishers. And in the intermediaries, you have this, it's almost like a passport that you have to get stamped to prove that you've been to these different, they're called controls. So like you'll go to a gas station or you'll go to a bakery or you'll go to a post office and you either have to like take a page out of a book or take a picture of something or have somebody sign a special hidden word. And so it's really fun. It's an adventure. It's physical, but it's not like competitive in a traditional sense. And as I move into like my late 30s, I'm still competitive, but more so like with myself and with the experiences that I want to have, and less so like, oh man, I finished in fourth and I really want to finish in third in this race. Like that stuff doesn't matter to me anymore, but the adventure part is still really meaningful.
That is so cool. Like that's the first time that I've heard any story that's made me go, wow. I wouldn't say it was the first time, but that's like, I don't know anything about the cycling world. I don't know anything about, and like to be able to go to France and do all that, that just sounds like an amazing experience. Like
it's really cool. I qualified, but didn't do it a couple of years ago. They only hold this event every 3 years, initially because they thought too many people would die. It's not that intense.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah. The guy who invented the Tour de France, he did it in its first year, in the inaugural year. And he was writing for a newspaper at the time, Le Monde. And he was like, this is the way to sell newspapers, is to hold this like fantastical event, this cycling event through France, and we'll be the headliner. And so it's really cool to have also spawned this very large competitive thing, but to know that like what it's really for is the amateurs and the adventurers, the people who they call them audaxes in England, which means audacious, essentially, like who have the audacity to go adventure on two wheels without any support, without any help. Like I really admire that. I think that that's an interesting way to occupy a space, you know?
No, that is totally cool. Where have you gone that's been your favorite place to travel to?
Oh, man. My wife she's been everywhere, right? And so she knows all the secret fun little places. I think the Champagne region of France is really great. We also went across Ireland. That was amazing. We were just staying in these tiny little castles that were, you know, 1,000 years old or whatever. And these people living this totally different life than what we do in North Carolina. It was such like a peaceful, serene place to be. And the people were so nice and welcoming and kind, and like going to the Cliffs of Moher and hanging out in a little village while it rained, eating stew and listening to like traditional Irish music. That was pretty cool. That's something that I'll never forget for sure. But it's really just, yeah, wherever I'm at with my family, that's somewhere new. My wife always tries to make it special with some quirky little geodesic dome we're staying in, or a yurt or something like that.
Oh, I love hearing people's travel stories. I love to travel too. So I've not been to Ireland.
Yeah.
And when you were describing it, I was like, man, because that's on my bucket list, you know, so.
You were just in Africa, weren't you?
Yeah, we were in Africa in December. So nice. December to the beginning of January. Yeah, it was fun. Good times. I would suggest go there if you ever have the opportunity. I know it's expensive. I know it takes a long time to get there, but
yeah,
it's definitely worth it if you get the chance. So I want to go to Ireland, though. That needs to be on my top list, because you know, now that I have time, let's go travel.
I have friends who walked across Ireland, and that is not something I would propose. That sounds miserable.
I mean, they've got a story too, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, before we go, I just wanted to first and foremost say thank you so much, Tommy, for coming on. Like, getting to know you, like actually have a conversation and learn so much. Like, it's been great. And it's been great seeing you grow in this community and grow with your content. So could you just let everybody know where they can find you and what you got going on?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm on the Superflex Super Show with John Hoag. We're recording just about every week right now and doing what I think is really compelling content. I'm also on Dynasty Junkies. We've got 4 hosts and 2 chairs, so we're rotating pretty much every other week. Who's sitting in those chairs. And I haven't announced this to anybody yet, so this will be it. My wife and I are starting our own podcast called The Blair Fang Feature.
Oh.
Yeah. Her last name is Fang. Mine is Blair. And it's going to be delving into the psychology and game theory of fantasy football, but really games in general, as they apply to fantasy football. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited to talk fantasy football, A, with my wife, but B, with someone who's just absolutely brilliant and doesn't know anything about NFL players, because it's going to lead to conversations that I just don't think are going to be in this space at all. And I'm really excited to provide that and to listen back, because like I said, I have really severe memory loss. So unless I listen to this episode, I'm not going to know what we talked about. So it'll be really fun for me to listen to my wife talk hopefully every other week.
Yeah. Wow. You've got all these really cool ideas. So I look forward to that. And I look forward to listening and continuing to listen to all the podcasts that you have coming out. And everybody out there, honestly, you need to go follow Tommy. So if you're not following Tommy, go do that now. Make yourself a good choice today and go follow Tommy. And also make another good choice. Come back next week for another episode of Get Real with Casey Kasem. And also remember to stay rad. Stay freaking rad.
Get real. Time to get real, everybody.